Translation. Purangjan, the hero, became attracted by the eyebrows and smiling face of the very beautiful girl and was immediately pierced by the arrows of her lusty desires. When she smiled shyly, she looked very beautiful to Purangjan, who, although a hero, could not refrain from addressing her. Purport. My dear devotees, please do not be disturbed by the purport. This is traditionally what we would call a heavy sannyasi class. But look at me. Look at me. I'm not a heavy sannyasi. I'm a very heavy, overweight householder. So either you're expecting a householder class where the householder has to prove how detached he is by pounding the Bhagavatam, not literally, or you're expecting someone who will give a sort of accommodating class and light, fluffy, make it all nice. I promise you neither today. Purport. Just preparing you. Every living entity is a hero in two ways. When he is a victim of the illusory energy, he works as a great hero in the material world. As a great leader, politician, businessman, industrialist, etc., and his heroic activities contribute to the material advancement of civilization. One can also become a hero by being a master of the senses. A Goswami. Material activities are false heroic activities, whereas restraining the senses from material engagement is great heroism. However great a hero one may be in the material world, he can be immediately conquered by the lumps of flesh and blood known as the breasts of women. In the history of material activities, there are many examples, like the Roman hero. Who's from Rome? Put your hand up if you're from Italy. Welcome to our Roman heroes. He didn't put his hand up. He's from Napoli. He's further down. He said, Romano. Like the Roman hero Antony, who became captivated by the beauty of Cleopatra. Similarly, a great hero in India named Baji Rao became a victim of a woman during the time of Maharashtrian politics, and he was defeated. From history, we understand that formerly politicians used to employ beautiful girls who were trained as Vishakanya. These girls had poison injected into their bodies from the beginning of their lives, so that in due course of time, they would become so immune to the poison and so poisonous themselves that simply by kissing a person, they could kill him. These poisonous girls were engaged to see an enemy and kill him with a kiss. Thus, there are many instances in human history of heroes who have been curbed simply by women. Being part and parcel of Krishna, the living entity is certainly a great hero, but due to his own weakness, he becomes attracted to the material features. Krishna bahirmukha hana bhoga vanchakari nikatasta mayatari japatiyadhari. It is said in the Prema Vivarta that when a living entity wants to enjoy material nature, he is immediately victimized by the material energy. A living entity is not forced to come into the material world. He makes his own choice, being attracted by beautiful women. That's what it says here. Comes into the material world being attracted by beautiful women. Every living entity has the freedom to be attracted by material nature or to stand as a hero and resist that attraction. It is simply a question of the living entities being attracted or not being attracted. There is no question of his being forced to come into contact with material energy. One who can keep himself steady and resist the attraction of material nature is certainly a hero and deserves to be called a Goswami. Unless one is master of the senses, he cannot become a Goswami. The living entity can take one of two positions in this world. He may become a servant of his senses, or he may become master of them. By becoming a servant of the senses, one becomes a great material hero. And by becoming master of the senses, he becomes a Goswami, or a spiritual hero. Oma Gyana Timirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantika. This is the material predicament. If you whatever you want, if you want an Olympic gold medal, you know, one of the ways that they train to get an Olympic gold medal is celibacy. You have to control. You actually have to become a Goswami, even to become an Olympic hero. You know what time in the morning they get up? I was listening to a radio interview the other day with some swimmers, as now it's the swimming season in the Olympics. You know what time in the morning they get up? Get up at 4 o'clock in the morning. And they begin training. That's their sadhana. So they have to control. They have to control their eating. They have to control their sleeping. And many of them, especially boxers, especially judo people, you have to control the sex desire. Running up to the Olympics. It's a very serious thing. Because everybody knows. As soon as that goes, the mental focus also goes. So in order to be any kind of hero, even Olympic hero, you have to control the senses. So in order to be a spiritual hero, you have to control the senses also. Puranjan, he is the emblem of uncontrolled senses. What Rupa Goswami, or what Prabhupada says in his purport to Rupa Goswami's Vachovegam verse in the Upadeshamrita, he says, Avirodha Priti. Avirodha Priti means unrestricted attachment. Avirodha Priti, it just means whatever the eyes contemplate, I see, I want, I could have, I must have, I will have, I have. This is the chain of events, you see. And it's all based on, I am my body, she's her body, or he is her body. If you're in San Francisco, He is his body, or Brighton, or Soho. And I can enjoy because I am able to interact with this person in this way, through the body, through the mind, through the body. You know, it's very easy, I think, in the first few days of coming to Krishna consciousness, to be theoretically convinced that you're not the body. It's kind of easy, isn't it? How many of you took more than, you know, two or three conversations to kind of conceptually understand that you're not the body? Okay? We all sort of, isn't it, Apurva? It's kind of easy, isn't it? You just sort of, yeah, it's kind of, you know, the soul, the body, the mind, death, reincarnation. Yeah, okay, I got that. Now what? So 2 days, self-realization. It's the science of self-realization, for God's sake. It shouldn't take that long. But actually understanding it, actually doing it, this takes years and years. It may even take one or two lifetimes. It may even take many lifetimes. Why? Prabhupada gave the story of the man who was bewildered. The king was bewildered, and he was wondering, why does it take such a long time to become free from Maya? I understand that Maya has a grip on me, but why does it take so long? And he went through all the different philosophers, and eventually one philosopher said, okay, enough of words, I'm just going to demonstrate this. And he came over to a tree, and he embraced the tree. And as he was embracing the tree, he turned to the king and he said, let me go, let me go, let me go. He was holding the tree and at the same time crying out, let me go. This is our predicament. Holding on and yet at the same time complaining. There was a monkey escaped from a zoo recently. It was in the news. And you know how they caught the monkey? You'd think that the monkeys would have learned by now, but they caught the monkey. They caught the monkey by the oldest trick in the monkey catching book. It was to put a banana inside a cage. And he reached in, caught hold of the banana. They came to capture him. He couldn't let go. Because he was captured because he couldn't let go. And Prabhupada said, this is how the deer is captured by the beautiful sound of the hunter's flute. And the deer goes, oh, very nice. And goes walking. Then he's captured. Or the monkey. Bananas. Don't do it. Too late. So in the same way, each living being is captured according to the nature of the body that he or she exists in. When I'm in the body of a female, and I can tell you from personal experience, I have been a woman in my previous life. And then I've been a man in my previous lives. So I did hypnotherapy one time, and I looked, and it wasn't the creeper moya that I've come to see in the mirror. It was someone else. I won't go into detail. But we go, usually man, woman, man, woman, man, woman, man, woman. You see. Why? Because the object of attention when I'm in my male body is woman, and the object of attention is man when I'm in my female body. And we go life after life after life. Janam, janam. Life after life after life after life. Trying to attain what is basically unattainable. We're looking for something in the wrong place, like the drunk man looks for his keys under the street light, even though he dropped his keys over there. He dropped his keys over there, so they said, why are you looking for your keys down there? He said, well, there's light here. There's light here. I can see something here over there, but you dropped them over there. He's looking in the wrong place. And this confusion goes on life after life, looking for something which is unattainable. And always Maya works in such a way that all I need to do is to make a small adjustment. I'm just on the verge. How many men are now in jail because they were just on the verge of their big, you know, their big deal. Their big, you know, they were dealing drugs and just on my verge of my big deal. I've got a big container load coming. This is I promise you, this is the last time I will do this. I've been into prison and spoken to, not as an inmate, but I've been and I've spoken to people. Why are you here? Oh, drug dealing. Of course, you speak to all the Hindus in prison. Oh, financial fraud. I was an accountant and I, you know, stole money from my company. Every single one of them. White collar crime. Speak to all the Muslims in a prison, drugs. You see. Speak to the Englishmen in prison, it's both. So the point here is that they were just on the verge of being able to control. And this is a difficult thing. Just at the tipping point of where you think, all I need now is another drug deal. All I need now is another theft. All I need now is a, you know, nice wife in Krishna consciousness. Then all my problems will be solved. All I need now is a nice husband in Krishna consciousness. Then everything will be solved. I'm just on the verge. It's just now coming. You see? Then my state will completely change. Does it change? I can tell you it does not change. It does not change. Does a mirage in the desert slake your thirst? Because you've run 5 feet forward? No. Mirage is always a mirage. No matter how fast you run, and you may think, I'm just on the verge of reaching that mirage in the desert. You see? Because I'm speaking not socio-religiously here. Socio-religiously, I'd encourage everyone to get married, but I'm giving the Bhagavatam class, which is, we have to speak about eternal philosophy. So this point here is that we are always just on the verge, you see, just on the verge of conquest. But that means, like Puranjan, that we're just on the verge of being conquered. And in this verse here, Prabhupada says that many, many men and women are conquered. In psychology, there's two things. One is called mental projection. Mental projection is where you have a concept yourself that you're working with, and using the mind as a cinema projector, you project it out onto the world around you. So you don't see reality as it is, you see reality as you are. You see. And you see other people's reactions to you as you are. And this is how we interact with each other. You see. Everybody carries their own conceptions around with them. But unfortunately, if the conception doesn't match up to reality, then you suffer. Just yesterday, there was a couple, after 10 years, they'd been a Muslim couple from Pakistan, and they had been found guilty of killing their own daughter. And they killed their own daughter 10 years ago when she was 17, because her values had become too westernized. So it's very interesting that you carry around with you. You may carry Pakistan around with you and mentally project it out inside your own home. But if you're not in Pakistan, then you'll be arrested and you'll receive the treatment that they were put away for 25 years. Now, because they're in their 40s, they will die in jail. But the man was obsessed. Actually, the man, it was said, was governed by his wife. It was very much like a Puranjan situation here. The wife was the dominant person in the relationship. And she told him, our daughter should be killed because she has a boyfriend. We wanted her to be a good Islamic girl. And she's becoming too westernized. You see? So they killed the daughter. The husband killed the daughter under the forcing of the wife. And then they both went on television crying, saying, Can anybody help us? Can anybody help us? Tell us where our daughter is. We just want some information. So they're not only murdered, but they lied to everyone, and everyone had sympathy. They aroused everybody's sympathies. And then the daughter's body was found. And then eventually what happened was the other daughter came forward 10 years later to say, I saw my father doing it. This was just a few weeks ago she came forward. So my conception is that my daughter has become too westernized and she needs to die. This is the codes of my, you know, dharam, my maryad. Okay? But you cannot make it up. You see? You cannot make it up. It's a mental projection. Firstly, it's a skewed understanding of the religion that you say you follow, so that's perverted. Then it's perverted because you're no longer in that country. You're in another country where that law does not apply. Thirdly, it's perverted because, you know, you yourself are tortured inside. And then fourthly, it's perverted because you're controlled by the mental conception of someone else. So it's wheels within wheels within wheels. Mental conception, mental conception, mental conception. 4, 5, 6 times removed. So the whole point here is that each of us has these conceptions within conceptions within conceptions from previous lifetimes. And lifetime after lifetime, we've brought that conception with us. And then we project it into the world. Then psychology has another term for what happens, is that we involve other people in our perception. This is called countertransference. Very good psychological term. You can use this in your preaching to New Age people. First there is transference. I transfer something to you by the mental projection. And then sometimes you believe what I say about you, and you also become complicit in that deception. So countertransference is me responding to your illusion about me. You see? It's like the man who was, you all know the story of the ship at midnight, right? I've told that story before. There's a ship at midnight. And he sees another ship out on the ocean. He sees the light, and he sees that the ship is coming close towards him very fast. And he says to the ship's first mate, he said, you flash a light saying you must go 5 degrees starboard, otherwise there will be a collision. So he signs. And then he gets the rather irritating signal back. you have to move. So then the man says, but I'm a battleship in the Royal Navy. You must move. And then the light comes back. And I'm a lighthouse. You must move. Okay. The point is, his conception is, I'm a battleship. And you have to move for me. The actual reality is, it's not that the light is coming towards him, is that he's going towards that light, and he will be the instigator of the collision. So in this way, his vision becomes changed 180 degrees. Completely changed. Or like the man who's driving his car, and he's driving his car, it's a hot summer day, like today. He's got the windows down, he's got the music playing, he's enjoying. And all around the corner, a woman comes in a car, and she shouts at him, she says, "Pig!" And the man immediately, his male ego becomes very much affected. And he looks at the woman, and she's got her sunglasses on, she's also enjoying, and he says, "Cow!" He's thinking to himself, how dare she talk to me like that? Pig, I'll give her a pig. And he goes around the corner, and in the middle of the road, there's a pig. So she shouted out to him to try to help him to avoid something. And he thinks, because he's an enjoyer, that this statement is either for my enjoyment or against my enjoyment. One who conceives of himself as an enjoyer thinks that any statement or any person or anything is either for my pleasure or against it. So this mental function, sankalpa, vikalpa, accepting or rejecting, based on who you think you are. You see, based on who you think you are. There was a story about the Bhagavat Sapta reader. You know this one? Story about the Bhagavat Sapta reader. And this man was he was living in Vrindavan. He was an old man, big beard, and he was giving class on the Bhagavatam. And in the audience, everybody was spellbound because he was a very good katha reciter. And then one lady off in the corner, she was and she was crying. So immediately the man began to think, oh, then I will increase my katha. So he was telling about Krishna's vipralamba, and the lady was going okay. And the gopis, and so the man was speaking, the lady was crying. So then, after the katha was finished, he said, so you you liked my Bhagavat katha recital? She said, oh, it was wonderful. He said, please tell me, what was it that you liked? She said, well, actually, she said, while you were speaking about Krishna and the gopis, your beard was going up and down. And when your beard was going up and down, I remembered my goat that died last week. I'm feeling such separation from my goat that you just reminded me of the goat. So Prabhupada said, here's a case that he has projected onto his audience. I am a Bhagavatam reciter. Therefore, my audience is enjoying my recitation. Her tears, therefore, must be her experience of my power to inculcate divine emotions. But actually, it was nothing of the sort. So Prabhupada tells that story because just to highlight that you can, normally in this world, we think one thing, but it's actually the opposite. So the guru's business is actually to come and cut the illusion away from the disciple. And herein is the difficulty, because nobody likes someone who does that. I love my guru, but I don't like my guru when he speaks strongly to me. Well, I'm sorry, that's the, you know, that's the business of the guru. I was, I was in hospital, and my surgeon came to me, and of course surgeons, they just love cutting. That's why they're surgeons. He said, well, we're going to have to cut. And immediately I said, do you really have to cut? He said, I'm a surgeon. What do you think I'm going to do? He said to me, this was Sanjeev. He said, you're a preacher. Do you like preaching? I said, yes. He said, so? I'm a surgeon, I like cutting. He said, when we're together, I let you preach to me as long as you let me cut you. So, once you understand that everything in this world is not well, and that you're not well, and you go to someone who can help you. But then they say something that you don't like to hear. Gorky Shordas Babaji said, a man, especially a married man who has wife and daughters, he will listen to his wife and daughters criticize him. And I have personal experience. Boy, do I have personal experience. Not my wife, of course. She's here, so I won't say anything. Except when I'm on a brahmachari retreat, then I'll tell. But daughters, gosh, how to survive. Daughters have that liberty, and fathers have that penalty. Daughters have the liberty to cut, and fathers have the penalty to just hear. So Gorky Shordas Babaji, he said that when a man hears his own daughter criticizing him once, twice, three times, four times, many times, he will listen to that daughter say so many bad things about him. Dad, you're just like this. Dad, you're just like this. Father, you don't understand anything. Then our children reach a point where they start trying to be guru. Have you noticed? No, not you boys in saffron, but our children start trying to teach us how to chant japa. They do, don't they? Isn't that strange? You know, our japa brought them into the world. Okay? And then they say, you know, you're not chanting right. Well, excuse me. When did I give the permission to be my guru? But they do. And they start teaching you what little they know. But we have to put up with that. So Gorky Shordas Babaji said, a man will listen to that many, many times. But if his guru says one difficult thing to him, even once, he will never want to hear his guru again. And unfortunately, this is what happens. We don't like to hear when someone has bad news. Just like yesterday, I went to the MOT. I went to get my card, MOT. In England, we have to check our cars every year to see that they can go on the road. Not like Italy. Every 2 years in Italy. In India, never. So every year in England you have to go, and if your car's okay. So I go to a man that the devotees have found, a man who's very good at giving certificates, you know, without too much fuss. But I took my car to him, and he said, "Oh, you're going to need a completely new set of wheels or tires." I said, "What, all four?" He said, "Yes, all four." And I went, in my mind, I thought, but that's going to cost me. Oh my God. And then I said to him, "Are you sure?" He said, "What do you mean?" He said, "I'm an MOT inspector. Look." So we don't want to hear bad news. I went there to hear the news. I steeled myself for some bad news, but I don't like to hear the bad news. You see? So none of us like to hear the bad news. But the guru, shastra, sadhu, has to give you the bad news. The bad news is, I'm sorry, you will never be able to enjoy in this material world. I'm sorry, that's the bad news. The good news is that there is another world. But the bad news is that this world is not for you. This is illusion. Let me establish reality for you. And we don't want to hear it. We don't want to hear it. So then we join a group of people called the Hare Krishna Temple, where they've just about managed to tolerate hearing the bad news. They still don't like it. You see. So even as a Vaishnava, we try to shy away from the bad news. We want to hear the good news. You see. It's unfortunate, isn't it? But unfortunately, in every human path of spiritual emancipation begins at this point. Vacho vegam, manasa vegam, Bacho Begum, you have to control what you say. You can't just say any damn thing. You can't just say what you want. Manasa Begum, you have to control your mind. Otherwise, we hear Aviroda Priti leads to Aviroda Yukta Kroda. Because you can't get everything that you want. And if you practice a discipline of no discipline, unrestricted attachment, if you look at everything you want, hear everything you want, eat everything you want, you will be an angry person. Why? Because this will inflame your desire. And desire can never be satisfied within the material world. It can't even be satisfied by your body. You cannot do it. Our body is not designed for physical pleasure. It's designed for physical restraint, actually. It's designed for tapasya. It's actually designed, we're mentally designed for vairagya and tapasya. And we're much happier like that. Just a couple of weeks ago, the police went into the apartment of one multi-millionaire living in one of the richest houses in London. And he found that his wife had died. But the man, for how long? At least 1 month. 1 month, the wife's body was lying there. Multi-millionaire. But he'd lost everything. He'd lost everything due to uses of hard drugs. Hard drugs had completely taken him to, Prabhupada said, the bottom of the mode of ignorance is madness. So it's madness that your wife is dead, but you're living in the house. And I tell you, on a hot summer's day, with the dead body of your wife, is not pleasant. You see? But he had tolerated this. Why? Because of madness. You see? And in court, they're debating whether he's an unfit man. So the point here is that the body is not designed. Yes, you can take in hard drugs and it gives you a feeling of pleasure. I was speaking to one person. I said, what is the experience? He said, well, you just, when the syringe goes in and the drugs goes in, he said it. And then he was describing to me everything. You know, I said, anyway, Prabhuji, just chant your japa. Anyway, he was a hard drug user. And he'd come to Krishna consciousness and he was chanting 16 rounds. And then he just wanted to use drugs again. But instead of going out into the street and buying drugs, he was growing his own drugs. He was a pujari on the altar, and behind the altar there was a whole field of poppies. So he was making his own homemade heroin at the temple. Hare Krishna. So when the senses become focused on one thing, it is very, very difficult to give it up. Very, very difficult to give it up. You become captivated. Become completely captivated. And then, within this lifetime, memory of that pleasure is stored away. Therefore, what happens is that the memories are replayed. We just have a very good digital memory. You think an iPad is something. The brain can have memories of pleasures from 25 lifetimes. And you can remember these pleasures. So then you project them out into the world. But for each pleasure that you experience, there has to be a concomitant suffering as a result of that pleasure in order for you to understand that that pleasure should be given up. So that's why the karma phala always matches the karma. You use your body in this way, the body is not yours. You've used it in that way. All right, now let's see what you do when the pain comes. So then the pain comes. So we have to become free from this. So the guru's business is to give us the bad news, but there's different combinations of disciple and guru that make that impossible. Four different combinations. First of all, there's the genuine disciple and the genuine guru. Genuine disciple wants to hear and is prepared for the bad news, and when hearing the good news of the spiritual world, is prepared to work hard in order to reach that spiritual world. And the genuine guru has actually experienced the spiritual world. And is convinced. And with that conviction manages to convince the disciple of the paramdrishtva, the higher pleasure. So this is a good combination. Genuine disciple, genuine guru. It's hard work. But the guru supports and chastises. This is the twofold function of a guru. Prabhupada said it's like a man who's making a brass pot. See, in the one hand you have the hand inside the brass pot, and outside the brass pot you have the little hammer. Prabhupada said he's going tuck, 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 tuck. If there's only tuck, 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 but there's no hand inside the pot, the kumbha, then the hammer's blow will smash everything. No shaping. If there's only the hand inside but no hammer, nothing will happen. You see, so guru has to use both things. The difficult thing is when you have a disciple who wants to be flattered and a guru who wants to flatter. Disciple who wants to be loved and a guru who wants to be loved. This is not a good combination. Because that can go on for years and no one's any the worse. Prabhupada said, I always remember the time when my guru chastised me. Prabhupada was speaking to someone, distracted Prabhupada's attention in class. He said, my Guru Maharaj chastised me for my lack of attention. He said, I really enjoyed that. I held on to that. That was my pleasure. So then bogus disciple, genuine guru, doesn't make progress because the guru is giving good instruction, but the disciple doesn't actually want to hear. And sometimes we'll make arrangements not to hear the guru. Or disciple will make arrangements not to get close to the guru. You see, even though Guru Maharaj is coming to the country, I won't speak to him. Why? Because he doesn't want to speak to me. Why? The real reason is that you don't want to speak to him because you may hear something that you don't like. We have to remove that tendency not to hear the guru. Genuine disciple, bogus guru. This is difficult for the disciple to make advancement. So then the disciple reaches a point where he or she has to have someone who will do that work for them. The chopping work. Then bogus disciple, bogus guru. Very good combination. This Bhaktivinoda Thakur said is... There's 13 entire sampradayas of these people, bogus disciples and bogus gurus. It's a very happy relationship. If you want to be happy, be a bogus disciple and find a bogus guru. You see? Otherwise, if you want to be in a permanent state of tension, you see? But having real genuine rewards, then find a genuine guru. But this is difficult. Sometimes we go to New Age places for preaching. I say New Age. But generally people think that to be restricted in any way from sense gratification, this is not good. Because what has happened now is that spirituality has become mixed up with Freudian and Jungian psychology. So you have a combination of the strands of psychology mixing with the strands of Eastern spirituality. And what happens is that people do yoga but believe in an unrestricted sex life. Or they do Buddhism and believe that you can eat anything that you want. And they come to the Hare Krishnas or they meet the devotees and they say, wow, you're celibate. You're so restricted. Why are you guys so tense? You know, or the yoga lady, you know, in her leotards, she comes to the brahmachari and she says, why are you guys so uptight? I just wanted to give you a hug. Okay, how many times have we been in that situation? Boys, try not to get yourself in that situation. You guys are so uptight. Well, that's like a person, just like now it's Ramadan, and we're going to be, not us, but others, but we're going to also be fasting for Janmashtami. And, sometimes when if a person comes up to you, especially I find myself about 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Okay, mornings I'm fine with. But 4 o'clock in the afternoon, if someone comes in and they're eating a plate of chips and you're trying to have a conversation with them at Janmashtami and your eyes are going between their eyes and the chips. Because really you're hungry. Okay, but you're trying not to look. You see. So, in this way, one who is restricted, there can actually be a greater attraction. So sometimes people who are celibate, there can be a greater attraction to women. What's something wrong with that? You see? How is that possible? Not because you're restricted. But in that restriction, if you follow the codes of brahmacharya, and it doesn't just apply to brahmacharis, of course, it applies to householders as well. What's the key ingredient for a happy householder life? Celibacy. What's the key element for a happy sannyas life? Celibacy. What's the key ingredient for a happy vanaprastha life or a happy, what was the other one? Brahmachari life. It's celibacy. It's some form of restriction. Either complete or partial. But celibacy is the key principle. It just means restricting the senses from indulging either physically or mentally in the sources of pleasure. So that makes that can make people very jumpy. And then sometimes a brahmachari can think, oh, I'm not a very good brahmachari. You see? I can't be a good brahmachari because I'm always thinking of women. No, it's because you're a good brahmachari that sometimes you think of women. You understand my point? It's sometimes when the mind is restricted, the mind rebels, the ego rebels. So it pushes those thoughts that you're trying to forget within the mind. But that doesn't mean that you're unsuccessful. It means that you have to reapply yourself. You see? There's so many people now swimming and throwing things and batting and physical prowess that didn't make it last time. Okay? They didn't make their time, or they didn't make their distance, or they didn't make their height. And they're going again for it because that's the spirit of achievement. Last time I didn't make it, this time I will. You see? So you may not get the gold medal or silver medal or bronze medal last time. But that doesn't mean you stop. It means you continue. Because that's your thing. So in achieving control over the senses, just because you don't make your time or your height or your... It doesn't mean that you stop. That's your thing. Self-realization is your thing. And you continue. So... these people who come to those who do make an effort to control their senses and do vacho vegam, manasa krodha vegam, and then udra vegam, udra vegam, upasta vegam, these things, tongue, belly, genitals, huh? Pasta, yeah, no, udra pasta. Actually, Krishna says you have to give up pasta completely. Oh, wait, no. Let me see. Oh, no, he didn't. That's right. But you have to offer it to him. So it's like someone going to someone in a hospital who has been asked, please do not smoke anymore. And the person comes into the hospital and says, I noticed in this hospital everybody's so restricted. Why are they so restricted? I mean, life should be free. You should just do what you want. It's just God put us on this earth to enjoy. That person is a very dangerous person in a hospital. Hospital is not just for sick people. Hospital is for people who know that they want to get better. And I've put them in a place. You know where we get the word hospital from? Very interesting. It's from when people used to go on yatra, Maharaj. They used to go, in England, they used to go on yatra, on pilgrimage. And they would go either to York or Canterbury or Walsingham. These places, they would go to see Maria. They would go to see the Virgin Mary in those days. So they went to and then living there were the sadhus, the monks. And they would give them food and water and a place to stay for the night. What was this called? Hospitality. And sometimes when they went on yatra, on their pilgrimage, how do you say pilgrimage in Italiano? Huh? Peregrinaggio. So when they had that, they would sometimes hurt their feet. So then the monks would look after their wounds or their sunburn, or they'd look after their body. And so hospitality became, and the place where you were given hospitality became hospital. So the first hospital was for spiritual people giving care to spiritual people. And then sometimes you didn't make it. Sometimes you went to the place of pilgrimage and you actually died. So that place then where they looked after you was called a hospice. A hospice. So it has its origin in the spiritual quest. And again, the spiritual quest, whether you're in medieval Italy, whether you're in India, wherever you are, you deny your home comforts and you go in search of something higher by becoming free from comfort. Of course, sometimes even when we join together with other sadhus, the difficulty is that we keep our old habits. Prabhupada tells the story of the man who went on yatra, but he was a thief. And he wanted to, in his mind there was a great tension. I see lots of people, it's night time, I see lots of bags. I can have the bags and their contents and I can run away, but no, I'm on yatra, I'm now trying to be a spiritual person. So what did he do? Prabhupada said he woke up at night and he just touched the bags and moved this bag over here and that bag over there and another one down here. He just moved the bags around. So he would get some satisfaction that he'd done something in keeping with his prarabdha karma. You see, he'd moved the bags around, but he hadn't stolen anything. So he said that when you come into the company of sadhus, your prarabdha karma, your tendencies are still there. And so these tendencies have to be, engaged. They have to be relocated. The difficult thing here is that we have to be, again, surrounded by people who will tell us more and more what our tendencies are. And that's why living in an ashram, for those of you who do live in an ashram, is the hardest thing to do on planet Earth. Prabhupada said it is so difficult to control the senses. He said, but even harder than that is to live together with other people who are controlling their senses. Because if you're controlling your senses, you're denying yourself pleasure. A person who never denies himself any pleasure is relaxed. He's peaceful. Hey, relax, man. Chill out. It's okay. It's okay. Don't be uptight. Be spiritual, man. Be spiritual. You guys, you Hare Krishnas, they're all, you're so uptight. Got to do my rounds. Got to get up in the morning. Can't eat this. Can't eat that. Got to dress like this. Can't look at her. Can't look at him. We're so uptight. You should be like me. I'm spiritual. And here's my girlfriend. Sure, I eat bacon sandwich. Look, watch. See? You don't have to be vegetarian to be spiritual, man. It's okay. Just cool. The world is filled with people like that, unfortunately. Did I get it right? You've met them? Okay, we've all met them. But the thing is, sure, it's okay to be cool when you're completely indulgent. But let me take you. That's like part of a. There was a game show. There still is a game show on television, and people enjoy it. But taking famous people and putting them in a jungle situation and seeing how they get on with each other. Because then that's where the polite behavior finishes. So you put people together in an ashram. You see, very difficult. The Prabhupada said, you know, the most difficult thing is to control your senses, to live together with other people who are controlling their senses in the ashram, and then, on top of that, to join together to preach. He says, so living together as part of a mission to preach Krishna consciousness in this world, this is the most difficult thing. Most difficult thing. There was a pop singer recently called Whitney Houston. Whitney Houston. She also, very, very successful, very, very rich, but she also died a very unfortunate death. And when they were interviewing various people to find out why that someone so beautiful, so loved, so famous, so rich, she had all the different things that you would associate with a high birth. She had everything. And she had beauty and high fame and wealth, and you know, so they analyzed why did she die such an ugly death. And the reason that they came to was she was completely surrounded by people who never said no to anything she wanted. This is the great curse. To be surrounded by people who will never tell it like it is. And we praise God to have friends that will tell you like it is. Please, God, give me devotee friends who will tell me about myself like it is. As Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakura said, please save me from those who flatter me. Because those who flatter me are my enemy. Those who flatter me are my enemy. Prabhupada said, when a disciple takes initiation, he commits suicide of the ego. It's heavy, isn't it? Commits suicide of the ego. Meaning that whatever you think you are, your guru will remove that. Because that's part of Maya. Even when you think I'm a good disciple, even when you think I'm a good brahmachari, all these designations, all these upadis will be taken. You'll be smashed, pulverized, until there's nothing left but just pure spirit soul. Prabhupada said, when the sandalwood is rubbed against a stone, the fragrance comes out. When gold is boiled and boiled, it becomes pure. When sugarcane juice is crushed between two iron wheels, the sweet juice comes out. So rubbing against a stone, boiling and crushed, these are not nice things. But out comes sweetness, fragrance, all nice things. So living in the ashram is a little bit like that. Now, 95% of our movement no longer lives in an ashram. In fact, 95% of our movement is really initiated by someone who they hardly see. That's all right. I was initiated by Prabhupada. I hardly saw him maybe 6-7 times. Did Prabhupada ever personally crush me, rub me, boil me, break me, chastise me? No. But did others? Yeah, you bet. And Prabhupada made sure that was our culture. The rubbing, crushing, pulverizing. You see? That's why the culture sometimes of remote guru, short conversation, flattering the disciple, it's not working. it adds up to very weak disciples. So therefore, any system where you have very good friends, and at least some of those friends should be people who can really, you know, not play around with you. Like you brahmacharis have the brahmachari council. And I understand that sometimes it's not all sweetness and light. Is that right, Sutapa? Sometimes you've got to tell it as it is. You've got to crush them. Pulverize them. Right, Ananta? He's nodding. Have you ever been crushed? Yeah? God, send me someone who will crush me. That should be our prayer. So, faced with this then, the disciple has to make choices whether to place himself or herself in situations where I'll be forced to surrender. Now, the difficult thing here is that sometime between the day of initiation and the day of cremation, you may drift off the path. Now, I gave Bhagavatam class here in 1975. I gave my first Bhagavatam class here in 1975. Nobody who was here then is here now. Why not? Are they all sleeping at home? No, they've all gone. I gave class here in 1985. Practically all of those devotees have gone. Except there's Indriyesh here. And you're still there, are you? Vishwambar's still there. I gave class in 1995. So this movement is very, very good at creating ex-devotees. We're very expert at bringing people and throwing them out. Now, sometimes that's not our fault, but Prabhupada said you should look and you should say, 50% is my responsibility, 50% is theirs. And the 50% is theirs is often because we misjudge how they should be spoken to, how they should be treated. Not everybody wants to be crushed and pulverized. And I must tell you that we are getting a better crop of devotees. Now we have our various council systems and mentorship systems in place because the mentors and the shiksha gurus and the servant leaders, they make sure that potential disciples are tested on their way towards initiation. Anyway, the point is that sometime in life, we drift away from Krishna consciousness, and there is no persons there to help us. We really have to see that that is pretty much the standard, because the standard default mechanism is I come to this world, as Prabhupada said, we want to enjoy beautiful women. Okay. This is a standard default mechanism. And also the women want to enjoy beautiful women. It just so happens that this is one lifetime when you're a woman. But mostly you weren't. Mostly you were men who wanted to enjoy women. And that's why this time you're women. And men, you were women who wanted to enjoy men. So that's your problem. Okay, so don't go proud thinking that, you know, I'm sitting on this side of the temple room. Brahmachari. Well, you know, if you were so good a brahmachari in your last life, why the heck are you still here? Why didn't you go back to Godhead last time round? I'll tell you why. The default mechanism is that we want to be Krishna. And I've made a little study of the people that wanted to be Krishna and dance the rasa dance. And it's very, very interesting. Because that's the default. We want to dance the rasa dance, but as Krishna, not as a gopi. To be enjoyed by Krishna. We want to be Krishna. Firstly, we have... should I mention names or not names? Well, this idea that I can be the Parampurusha at some stage in my spiritual life, this is something that contaminates everyone, and it pops out at a certain time, whether brahmachari, grihastha, so the grihastha wants more than one wife, this is his attempt to be Krishna. The sannyasi wants to have lots of female followers, that's his attempt to be Krishna sometimes. The brahmachari wants to entertain you know, women within the mind, or he wants to deal in different ways. This is just an attempt to be Krishna. And where there's no tight control, what happens is that people give vent to those feelings. So there was one Sampradaya, there's a very famous court case in 1863, either 1863 or 1883, around about the time Bhaktivedanta Manor was built. And this was in Bombay. And it was of a certain Vaishnava sect. The guru, the acharya of the sect, used to stand in the middle of a circle of ladies and used to have them dance around him. So this idea that guru is Krishna, because it is possible by reading Vaishnava philosophy that you can extrapolate anything. They did it in 1970, and when they did it in 1970, Prabhupada said, "Get out, all of you, get out, take sannyas and leave." Okay. So they'd said, "Oh, what we haven't understood is that Prabhupada is Krishna." Prabhupada said, "Get out. You spoiled everything now. Get out." You see, guru is, when Paramatma comes out of the heart, that is guru. So therefore my guru is Paramatma, therefore my guru, because I have Krishna in my heart, therefore devotee has Krishna, not the forearm form of Lord. Therefore guru is Krishna. Therefore guru is Krishna. Sometimes he behaves as Krishna. Therefore my guru can have Rasalila. Now Bhaktivinoda Thakura said this chain of thought led to many of the upper sampradayas in Bengal at the time. But this Vaishnav sect I'm talking about is not even one of those Bengali upper sampradayas. It's something else that's much, much, much bigger. So eventually this guru was not only dancing with his female disciples, but he was enjoying in other ways in the dead of night. And this really offended the British at the time. And the British man who took the court case, a judge from England, this man who had been dancing and enjoying with his disciples like this was a top-class Brahmin. And on his way into the court, he had absolutely immaculate clothing. And the British judge, who was a Christian, a meat eater, they came into the same corridor at the same time. And this was after some days of the judge having listened to the evidence of what these so-called Krishna Bhaktas were up to. And they bumped into each other, you know. And this caused him great concern. The guru said, "How dare you touch me? I'm Brahmin." He became very angry. "I am Brahmin." He said, "You'll make me unclean." And the judge looked at him and he said, "Touch you?" He said, "My dear sir, I wouldn't even touch you with a barge pole. Even to touch you with a very long stick would make me so unclean. I would have to wash for weeks. I'm so disgusted at your exploits." And this is all recorded. And anyway, it's interesting. Interesting. So there was a person in, it pops out in Christianity. There was a person known as John Rowe up in Yorkshire. And he had seven young ladies, because he said, "I am Jesus and these are the Vestal Virgins." Okay, very famous case. There was a person who was an offshoot of the Maharishi Mahesh movement down in Southampton, Ravindra. He was down in Southampton and he was conducting so-called yoga and meditation sessions. This was about 10 years ago, 15 years ago. Oh gosh, no, it wasn't. This was 25 years ago now. Gosh, memory contracts. So he was an offshoot. He was an Englishman. And he was another John, a John Yar. And what happened was that he was having different relationships with other men's wives and telling them that they were the exclusive person in his life. And he just felt the sense of spiritual kinship. And we have something really on a spiritual plane. Okay, I really feel this deep spiritual connection with you. Girls, anytime someone says, I really feel this deep spiritual connection with you, charlatan. This is a charlatan. Deep spiritual connection means I'm really lusty, but I have to elevate my lust and disguise it so that it will... Such a lot of this hogwash goes on in so-called spiritual circles in England. And our movement should be very, very... You know, we should speak out. It's hogwash. Water that has washed a pig. New age. It's old age. It is old as anything. So anyway, this person was then eventually discovered. In the Gaudiya Sampradaya, we find the upper Sampradayas where gurus have many female disciples. And we don't practice this in our movement, but normally you receive the mantras and you receive your japa beads and your neck beads and your tilak at initiation. You get everything at initiation. So sometimes the guru was... He was putting tilak on his female disciples in all the 12 places during the initiation ceremony. So just these things go on and on and on and on. I could go on, but I won't because, you know, it's time now. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, he got tired with this. And he wrote a song called Vaishnava K. And he listed all the different things. He said, what kind of Vaishnav are you? And it begins, Dushtaman tumi kishera vaishnava lagya pratishtara kore. Maharaj, my Bengali is not very good. But anyway, he once gave a class in between Shamakund and Radhakund. Why? Because he said, everybody at Radhakund is a sahaja, and I have to speak on very, very simple things. So you know which verse he chose to speak on at Radhakund? Was it Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's Krishna Bhavanamritam? Was it Govinda Lilamrita? About Krishna and the gopis? Which verse was it? It was a very, very esoteric verse. Listen to this verse. This is the verse that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati chose to speak on at Radhakund. Very high, very, very high. Vacho vegam, manasakroda vegam, jiva vegam, udarapasta vegam. And they came and they said, why is he speaking on this verse? Why is he speaking on this verse? Doesn't he know? We know, we already knowing these things. So then someone came to see him and he'd written this song. And this is one of the verses from the song, and I'll finish on this verse. Tumara kanaka bhogera janaka kanakera dware sevaha madhava kaminir kama nahetava dhama tahar malika kevala yadava. Is that all right, Maharaj? Just about. He says, your wealth is simply used for mundane pleasure. But you should use it in the service of Madhava. The desire for women is not your business because Krishna is their only true master. This is the third verse of Vaishnava K. Tahara Malika Kevala Yadava. So one man came to Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati in Calcutta and he said, what do you mean by this verse? Who are we? Have you written this literally? He said that all women are meant only for the enjoyment of Krishna and no one else, even their husbands. And Bhaktisiddhanta Thakura said, yes, yes. He said, that is the true meaning of this. Such enjoyment is meant only for Krishna and all others are trespassers. Haribol. Okay. Was that a heavy enough class? Now I've got to, at 2 o'clock today, I have to meet with a group of householders, telling them how we can take everything that I've said and put it into practice in real life. All right. So this is Shankachuda. Shankachuda means to take wealth and beautiful women because he came and he had the beautiful wealth, and he took away the jewels, and he took away the gopis from Krishna. You see, you can't take away Krishna's gopis from Krishna. So Krishna went and got the jewel back. Doink. Hammer on the head. Took the jewel that was like a conch. And this demon was finished, was punished. So let us continue our glorious struggle, because this makes us even greater than Olympic champions. We're being trained up for the greatest test. How we can use not the athletics race, but the great human race, the great human race of life. How we can win gold. And we'll win gold and we'll be awarded by Krishna himself. He's in charge of the committee. And the flag that will go up in the national anthem goes like this. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Yes, we did it. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Granthraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.